the mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, the fight over remote work. Employers want people back in the office, but some employees are going so far as to take legal action to stop them from enforcing that back-to-the-office mandate. Do they have a case? And is there a compromise to be found in the new normal? Also this morning, in honor of Teacher Appreciation Week, recognizing the dedication of today's educators in an increasingly challenging environment and concerns over the future of the profession. And we have a collection of original recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, May 10th, 2024. Big news this morning. We may be able to see the Northern Lights this weekend. Forecasters say that the Aurora Borealis may be visible to a large part of the country tonight over to tomorrow morning. Astronomers at spaceweather.com say the geomagnetic storm that causes the Aurora Borealis has been upgraded from G2, which is kind of a moderate level, all the way to G4, which is the severe level due to a giant sunspot that has been hurling coronal mass toward the Earth. And forecasters with the Space Weather Prediction Center said that during previous solar activity of this magnitude, the Aurora Borealis has been seen as far south as Alabama, even. You see the Northern Lights in the deep south. And now, mind you, number one, these things are incredibly difficult to predict. So we may or may not see it. We do have a little bit of cloud cover in the forecast for tonight over to tomorrow morning. Number two, the other thing to keep in mind, it probably will not be as spectacular if you were to see the Northern Lights like up in the Nordic states, like Norway and places like that, that we typically think of. It won't be quite that spectacular, but should be visible with the naked eye, according to the forecast for the Northern Lights tonight into tomorrow morning. So definitely something to check out if you have never seen it. Are you going to the movies this weekend? Fandango, the movie website, has announced a new feature on its app. Fandango has an app where now you can not only buy your movie tickets in advance, but now you can buy your popcorn and your milk duds and all of and your drink and everything else from the concession stand in advance. And then just pick them up at the concession stand when you go to the theater. That'll be ready for you in a designated area to scoop up your snacks and off you go to the theater. No waiting in line. AMC theaters are first to add this feature, and then it will be rolling out to other movie chains. Members of the AMC Stubs Club, which will also be able to earn and redeem rewards benefits for concessions offered through Fandango as well. According to their 2024 movie-going trends and insights study of more than 6,000 moviegoers, one in four general ticket buyers say they have tried pre-ordering concessions in the past, and 97% were satisfied with the experience. So this is something that the public, the movie-going public, has demanded, and now you have the opportunity to order your concessions in advance at the snack bar. Visit our snack bar! Hot dogs, popcorn, and all sorts of cold drinks. Anyway, that actually is kind of cool. Some of the other most interesting, speaking of apps and being able to order things online, which is, you know, all the rage now in the modern day, Mr. Softy, the iconic soft ice cream company. Mr. Softy, they have 350 franchises and 625 ice cream trucks in 18 states, including Ohio, New York, Connecticut, Arizona, Florida, California, Texas, Wisconsin, but Ohio included. Mr. Softy is launching an app to let you know when their ice cream truck is in your neighborhood. That's right. When we were kids, we didn't have any of these fancy apps. We had to listen for the jingle from the truck, the music from the truck, and we got all excited. Well, now there's an app for that. if you want to know exactly when the Mr. Softy truck will hit your block, you can just type in your zip code and find out the location of the nearest truck. And if you don't want to wait, you can head on over to where the truck is. I like the idea. I mean, it's kind of an obvious thing. You know, it's surprised that it's taken this long to have this kind of app, but it does sort of ruin the experience of, you know, hearing the ice cream truck in the distance and running as fast as you can into the house to beg your mom for money to get ice cream in the summertime. I don't know if kids do that anymore, but there you go. Some of my best memories of childhood right there. You remember the other day we had a story about how loud vehicles are signs of psychopathic tendencies among men. Men who have loud vehicles, the loud tailpipes on their cars and their trucks and so on that they use to startle other drivers and call attention to themselves, right? They typically are owned by men with psychopathic tendencies. Well, turnabout is fair play. I mean, you don't want to criticize the men without turning that around on the women as well. A new study from the University of New Mexico. Not the University of New Mexico. Anglia Ruskin University in New Mexico. Okay, this new study suggests that a clue to female psychopaths could lie in how often a woman moves her head. By analyzing interviews of women being interviewed by police, researchers discovered, like just like male psychopaths, women with psychopathic traits tend to keep their heads very still. Psychopaths may use this lack of motion to hide clues regarding their true intentions. So it's actually pretty good to know if you're going on a date this weekend. I'm just saying. Anyway. And elsewhere among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Oh, yesterday we had the story about the aroma of food cooking being a indicator of air pollution. We were saying they're going to outlaw this next. Well, here's the next thing that we have to be concerned with. Here's the next thing that's going to kill us, going to be the end of humankind as we know it. That new car smell, according to a new study out of Duke University and the Green Science Policy Institute, the new car smell could be toxic. They found that the air inside of some vehicles made since 2015 is polluted with flame retardant chemicals, some potentially neurotoxic or carcinogenic. The levels were higher in the summer compared with winter months because the sunshine streaming through the windows into the, you know, the greenhouse effect activates all of those chemicals. It's the same stuff that creates that new car smell that we all love, but it's going to kill us. The researchers recommend ventilating vehicles, particularly in the summer, and parking in the shade if possible. So it's the new thing that is going to kill us, which is maybe why we shouldn't worry about the fact that the Hyundai Elantra is at the top of the list of most stolen cars this year. According to the National Insurance Crime Bureau, full-size pickup trucks used to be at the top of the list, but last year, Hyundai Elantras had more than 48,000 thefts reported across the nation. Hyundai and Kia combined to make up 6 of the 10 most frequently stolen vehicles. Not a big surprise. As a matter of fact, it says thefts of those makes of vehicles have surged since 2020 by as much as 1,000%, which, not coincidentally, is right around the time that those videos started circulating online showing how to steal the cars with just like a USB cable. There was a glitch in the software that now the companies say they fixed, but too late for the 48,000 thefts across the nation. The Elantra, the most stolen vehicle in the country. But if you want a vehicle that no one will steal, this is all kinds of awesome. A radio flagon, a radio flyer red wagon, easy for me to say, one of those, you remember when you had a little kid, you had the little red wagon radio flyer on the side. Well, somebody in, I think it was Tennessee. Anyway, this guy actually created a full-size radio flyer red wagon the size of an SUV, and it is now for sale. It has a top speed of 60 miles per hour, was built on the chassis of an old Mazda pickup. Judy Foster says she has decided to sell the vehicle because her husband has passed away. She says, I'll miss it. I'll miss the fun of driving it. She said, it is so much fun to take somebody for a ride and seeing people's reaction, as you would probably imagine. The wagon is being auctioned by Alaska Premier Auctions and Appraisals, and bidding is open now through Sunday. So I'm thinking gift for mom. According to the listing, the Radio Flyer Red Wagon is fully street legal. So there you go. You'll get a lot of great looks there. I think that's awesome. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly sunny today with a high around 60. Partly cloudy tonight, low in the mid-40s. The Stamp Out Hunger food drive is on Saturday. Jeff Kranz with the local chapter of the National Letter Carriers Association was on WFIN's Chris Oakes to discuss the food drive. He says once the food is collected, it'll go down to the West Ohio Food Bank in Lima to be checked out and then come right back to our community.
Then we'll come right back to Findlay and Hancock County. So everything that's collected here will eventually get back here to be distributed to the folks in the community.
People are encouraged to leave non-perishable food items that have not expired next to their mailboxes on Saturday, and the letter carriers will collect the food items while delivering mail during their daily routes. Food donations can also be dropped off on Saturday in the parking lot behind Great Scott at 301 West Main Cross. Get more details in the story on our website. A new traffic light could be in place at an intersection just east of Findlay by the middle of the summer. Traffic signal is planned for the intersection of US 224 and Township Road 237. The Ohio Department of Transportation says traffic there is near the threshold of warranting a signal, and traffic will increase even more once further development occurs on the north side of that intersection. Get more on this traffic signal project in this story on our website. The National Weather Service confirms at least 12 tornadoes hit Ohio on Tuesday.
Most of them hitting the western part of the state. Five were reported in Warren County alone. The Weather Service says crews are still surveying areas of Franklin and Butler counties. This does bring our statewide total for 2024 to 48. That's the most tornadoes we've ever had at this point during any year.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting. Dr. Bill Coase with Blanchard Valley Health System with some advice on pain management. He says if you're experiencing pain, reaching out to a pain management specialist sooner rather than later could greatly improve your quality of life. Get more from the doctor in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
Well, you know, one of the more unexpected effects of COVID when everyone was working from home was that many people discovered they really liked it. And ever since, they have been fighting employers who want them back in the office now that the pandemic is over. In some cases, even going so far as to take legal action to keep working remotely. Carl Gould is a world-renowned business coach and consultant, the founder of Seven Stage Advisors. Carl, do they have a case, I mean, legally to force employers to let them continue to work remotely?
Well, legally they do if the mandate to come back in the office violates public policy of some sort, or it violates some other state law. So if they're in or if it's in breach of their employment contract. So if it says in my employment contract that, hey, you can work remotely, and then all of a sudden you're telling me I've got to come into the office, I can fight that, yes.
But for most folks, this was something that was never really on the table until, like we said, the pandemic forced people to work remotely, and they got this taste of it, said, hey, I want to keep doing this. Absent some sort of prohibition, this is still at... they're still at the mercy of the employer, basically, right?
Yeah, and most states are what are called at-will states, which means, you know, you don't need cause to let somebody go. You can enforce these sorts of things. And so, yeah, if you just don't feel like coming back into the office, you know, you're putting your employment at risk, for sure.
One of the points that work-at-home proponents point to was that statistic that productivity actually went up when people were at home during the pandemic. But my guess is that probably had more to do with the fact that there were fewer distractions. We really couldn't do much of anything other than work during the pandemic.
It could be. So let's take a quick sanity check for a moment, right? And let's go pre-pandemic for just a moment. There were no companies out there that said, you know what? I want to increase the productivity of my company. I want to be more profitable. I want to build a better culture. So I'm going to send everybody home.
Right.
Nobody was doing that. Right. And it's well accepted that if you want to build a company, you need the collaboration, the energy, the camaraderie of an office. And for in almost all cases, of course, there's some outliers. But what we're finding now is a combination of in the hybrid workforce of some days in the office and some days not. That's a good compromise, you know, and it's a necessary compromise too, because during the pandemic, when employers sent all their employees home, they could no longer afford all of their office space, so they downsized. So we need to have some hybrid offices now for that very reason.
The irony here, and I will mention this in the interest of full disclosure, is that we are actually originating today's show from the home studio this morning. So I get it. I get the attraction of working remotely. And of course, for a while, workers could force the issue because the labor market was tight. Workers had leverage. They felt empowered. Did they overplay their hand a bit?
No, there's a reason why people are asking to remain remote that not a lot of others people are talking about. And one of the main reasons is that a lot of people went out and got side hustles. They're doing part-time jobs, and not just a few. There are more than 2 million people during the pandemic who took up side hustles. And so they know that they can't go into their job and do their side hustle. So they have to do it from home. So they don't want to come back in the office because they don't want to give up their side hustle, which could be very lucrative. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, so I respect the fact that, you know, people are being entrepreneurial and they're going out there and they're getting extra jobs. But what they're doing is they want their full-time job because it comes with health benefits and other, you know, 401k and retirement plans and other benefits. But then they want the side hustle is gravy on top. So this is, in many cases, this is somebody not wanting to give up the extra earning power that they have by being remote.
To that end, that actually maybe ties in one of the other trends that we see within the workforce is these flexible work schedules where it may not necessarily be the 9-to-5 anymore. And, you know, workers are increasingly saying, hey, if I'm getting all of my work done, if I'm doing what's being assigned, why does it matter whether I'm working 8 hours a day, 7 hours a day, working, you know, 5 p.m. to 9 a.m. instead of 9-to-5, you know, those kinds of things.
Yeah, and quite frankly, that's a good argument. I mean, there are a number of positions in companies where it's not a time-stamped job, meaning, you know, you don't have to be at your desk at a certain time for a certain function. Outcome-based jobs where you just have to make sure you hit certain deadlines and you get certain things done. So every business has to find the balance there. Now, I do have a warning, though. those that are fighting hard for the opportunity to be remote, be careful what you ask for, because when you work in an office, your only competition for your job is another person who's local or somebody who's willing to move and work locally at that office. The moment you win the battle of, hey, I can work remote now, you have entered a different war. Mm-hmm. And the war is there are 500 million people that can do your job worldwide, and employers are learning that too. So you win that battle, you can work remote. Well, guess what? The employer knows that, hey, if it happens on a screen and it's a recurring task, anyone in the world can do it.
Of course, that also cuts both ways, because in a sense, workers will always have some measure of leverage here, because companies do need them. And if remote or hybrid work is a perk that people want, someone is going to offer it as a way of, you know, getting those workers away from your business. So there is some impetus for companies to be somewhat flexible and find that happy medium, that compromise that you were referencing a little bit earlier.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, no, and this is the new employment environment we're in right now, where companies are evaluating what really needs to be done in person and what does not. Mm-hmm. Who do we really need to have in the office and who do we not? And let's find that balance. And I think this actually starts a healthy conversation between the employer and the employee, because some employees, due to the pandemic, have different life responsibilities than they did before. Caring for a loved one, they have a pet now, they've taken in family members, they don't have a car because they couldn't afford it during the pandemic. So there are a number of things, or they may have moved, so there are legitimate issues they're dealing with that they didn't deal with before, and they should speak to their employer about it, because the employer wants to accommodate. They just have to know that they can run their business profitably.
Yeah.
And as long as they can do it, they'll give you all the flexibility that you want. The question becomes, when it starts to hurt the business, they have to start making some tough choices. So going the legal route, I don't think that's the way to go with your employer.
Yeah.
If they've broken the law, that's one thing. But if they haven't broken the law and you are still suing them or you're taking legal action, my advice to an employer is, when they do that, is to simply say, I accept your resignation.
Yeah. When the dust settles on all of this, I wonder, will this result in more formal employment agreements, i.e. contracts, as opposed to kind of handshake deals or just, you know, understandings between employers and employees?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's a good thing. That's a worthwhile exercise to go through, where if you're the employer or the employee, let's have an agreement that just spells out what the expectations are, so none of us are surprised.
Yeah.
So we don't have a misunderstanding a year from now. And I think that'll lead to a much better work environment and ultimately a better customer experience.
Carl Gould, again, is a world-renowned business coach, consultant, the founder of Seven Stage Advisors, on the compromises that are still, you know, the waters we're still navigating post-COVID after all this time. Carl, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Anytime.
So as you have probably heard by now, this is Teacher Appreciation Week, recognizing the dedication of today's educators in an increasingly challenging environment and amid concerns over the future of the profession. In honor of Teacher Appreciation Week, we are joined this morning by Findlay City School Superintendent Dr. Andy Hatton. And Andy, thanks very much for taking the time. First of all, I know at the Findlay City Schools, you have kind of expanded the idea of Teacher Appreciation Week to include not just teachers, but all of the support staff at the Findlay City Schools.
Yeah, Chris, good morning. Thank you very much for having me today. And that's right. Honestly, I believe in that we have the best teachers anywhere, but it truly takes a team of people to support our teachers in what they do. The teacher is the most important person in the classroom. They build those strong relationships, and we just appreciate every single thing that they do.
I know that like we said, this comes at a time when there are concerns about shortages of teaching staff, of substitutes, of support staff, bus drivers, all of this. I mean, it really is the opportunity to reemphasize just how important these individuals are.
That's right. You know, teaching is much more than a job. It's a calling. And we look for the best here in Trojan Country. But quite frankly, the teacher shortage and the staff shortage is real. It's impacting every community across the state and across the country. That's why we invest so much in our people and the relationships that we have with them to make it a real attractive place to be.
There are also concerns. I hear a lot of teachers say that one of the biggest things that they are dealing with these days in terms of making their jobs more challenging is a lack of support, not just in some cases from administrators, but even more so from the community, lack of parental involvement, that kind of thing. How difficult is this in today's environment to be a teacher today?
You know, it's I've been doing this a long time. I'm wrapping up year 29, and I will say that this has been something that's been with us for a long time. Teachers absolutely need support, as do all of our staff members. And quite frankly, we actually do get a lot of support from our families. We have amazing families in Findlay. And but we do need to bring resources to bear for our teachers. There are a lot of demands and expectations that continue to, it piles on. And what we're trying to do is we look very carefully at ways to take things off the plate, to scale the work across a team of people so that teachers can do what they do best, which is build relationships and personalized learning for each of our students.
You know, it is that doing more with less thing that, you know, and it's not just teachers, obviously, a lot of people across the board in many professions, you know, face increased scrutiny from the public, trying to do more with less. I mean, all of these challenges are not necessarily unique to teachers, but what are the best ways for the public to show their support? And not just this week, but ongoing support for the work that teachers do in educating our kids.
You know, I really appreciate that because I think that every day should be Teacher Appreciation Day. I firmly believe that public education is the backbone of our, you know, any community and our state and our country. And I'm obviously very proud of the work all of our teachers do. I think that, you know, again, we do have incredible support from our community and from our families here in Findlay City. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, just open communication with teachers, check in on them, send them a kind note, you know, those kind of things, volunteer. And then to the greatest extent that any family is able, just, you know, sending each child into school with the support and the love that they need so that they're ready to learn.
This is an exciting time to be a teacher. I mean, for all of the challenges that we talk about within the profession, this is an exciting time to be a teacher with the technology that is available, with the resources that are being leveraged. It is a good time to, you know, be an educator and looking forward to, you know, what those possibilities are moving forward.
It is. And we have some incredible resources available. Like I said a moment ago, the teacher is always going to be the most important person in the room, and the research brings that to bear. With the emergence of generative AI, we are cautiously optimistic about what that can do to support teachers mm-hmm. in terms of personalizing learning for students, taking a lot of, you know, in terms of some of the work, busy work, if you will, that teachers do,
right.
freeing up some of that time so that they can focus on one-on-one time or small groups with students to, again, personalize that learning and enhance relationships.
And I know that that's, you know, really what you want to focus on when you're speaking to the next generation of educators who will mold the kids, the lives of the kids of the future. What would you say to anyone who is considering a career in education to encourage them to do that? Because we need these teachers and support staff.
We do. And again,
public education is a calling, and I want to celebrate the teaching professions program that the Millstream Career Center has. Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity to meet with those students about a month ago, and I do believe that the future is bright in public education. We have so many young people that are passionate about giving back to their communities, whether it's in early learning or middle school, high school. It is a calling, and it is so special to serve and to belong to something larger than yourself and to give back to your community. So I just don't think there's anything, any greater profession than public education. So again, we have some amazing students coming through the pipeline that are ready to jump in.
Dr. Andy Hatton, again, Findlay City School Superintendent for Teacher Appreciation Week this week. And while we've got you here real quickly, as you alluded to, end of another school year is coming up quickly. What is on the agenda? What are the summer plans for the Findlay City Schools? What will be going on behind the scenes over the next couple of months?
Well, in any school district, you're always looking ahead and planning for the next school year, honestly, starting in late February, early March for scheduling. So we've been scheduling our students. Right now in the immediate short term, we're looking forward to our graduation, our commencement ceremony, and celebrating all of the hard work of our seniors. And again, that's another celebration for teachers, because that's not just a finish line, that's a new starting line for our young people. As we go into the summer, that's when we've got our summer lunch program that's going to be at Glenwood Middle School. We've got and then also that is the time of year when maintenance and operations and grounds gets in to prepare our buildings, our facilities for the upcoming school year.
Again, Dr. Andy Hatton with us this morning. Thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having us, Chris. Much appreciated. And thank you to all the teachers out there.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
A maintenance man at a California shopping center came across an interesting discovery in one of the open dumpsters behind the shopping center. He found dozens of boxes full of legal files carrying the name of the Speckman Law Firm, documents that contained social security numbers and other personal information from former clients of the firm, the Speckman Law Firm. Tracing them back, attorney David Speckman confirms that the documents were indeed legitimate, but he said he is not to blame. He didn't just dump them. He actually hired a company that was supposed to pick the documents up and shred them before disposing of them. And apparently they didn't do that. The documents were picked up to be shredded on Monday and were found in the dumpster the next day. Mr. Speckman says he is retired and leaving the state of California, and so he was trying to destroy all of his old files and documents, but didn't work out that way. What makes this rather ironic is the slogan of the Speckman Law Firm, which was on all of the documents that were found in the dumpster. The slogan of the law firm, your financial lifeguard. Well, apparently not, as it turns out. Somebody's got some splaining to do, though. Elsewhere in the broken news. At Tweed New Haven Regional Airport in Connecticut, security officers found a hollowed-out grenade in someone's luggage the other day. This was Wednesday, actually. They found a hollowed-out grenade in a passenger's luggage. The terminal had to be briefly shut down when TSA agents located the device. The person with the grenade said it was supposed to be a present. It was a gift for someone that they were going to see. The individual added that they had no idea it couldn't be brought into the airport. Really? You didn't think a grenade, hollowed out or not, a grenade would be a prohibited item? Some people just shouldn't be allowed to fly. You know what I mean? The grenade was confiscated But because it was inert, it was hollowed out, it wasn't an actual weapon. No charges apparently will be filed. So, or at least they haven't been filed yet. I don't know, but that seems like somebody is probably going to get some, going to be facing from some charges out of it. You would think. Just for reference, no, you can't bring a grenade onto a plane. Don't, in case you were thinking of it, don't. Back to California, where the manager of a Subway restaurant is on the mend after getting a knuckle sandwich from an irate customer who claimed his sandwich did not have enough ham. Apparently, Monique Larios said a customer claimed to have ordered double ham on his sub, but when it didn't have enough to his liking, he complained to the manager. So the manager said, what are you going to do? Hit me over ham? And he hit me. I love that. She told reporters and police officers, I go, what are you going to do? Hit me over ham? And he hit me. By the way, they have proof that he ordered just the regular amount of ham and not the double ham that he claims. So he's going to be facing charges, and she plans on not only pressing charges, but maybe filing a lawsuit. What are you going to do? Hit me over ham? And he hit me. I love the quote. Let's see. But she's going to be fine eventually. She's recovering from her injuries. A North Carolina woman might be on the hook for over $2,000 in fraudulent charges after a restaurant she visited reportedly posted photos of her credit card online. Man, Rhonda Deaver apparently left her card at Smith's Cafe last week. But by the time she realized that she had forgotten the card, someone at the restaurant had posted pictures to a Facebook group. Now, they were trying to be helpful. You know, somebody forgot their card, if this is you. But unfortunately, the whoever it was that posted the image of the card forgot to black out the card number and all of the pertinent information that led to... Rhonda said, I couldn't believe that they did it. And now I might be responsible for all of these charges. Over $2,000 worth of charges were made using the card before she closed the account. The owner of the cafe has not yet commented on the situation. I understand that they were trying to be helpful, but please, just don't help, you know? Please, don't help. Don't help me anymore. I can't afford it. And finally, in the broken news this morning, this is our dumb criminal of the day. And this is not the first time that we've had a story like this. A case of a criminal tripping herself up. A Colorado woman who got caught trying to steal a pickup truck. Apparently, the unidentified woman had spotted the pickup, which still had the keys inside and just couldn't resist. According to the Boulder Police Department, she got in, fired up the vehicle, and then discovered it had a manual transmission and she didn't know how to drive a stick shift. Her plan to steal the truck thwarted by the stick shift. Because she didn't know how to drive the stick shift, she just got out of the truck and started to walk away. Unfortunately, because the vehicle was not in gear, it rolled into a fire hydrant. And that attracted attention, and that's how she was eventually caught. No injuries reported, and the truck was quickly returned to its rightful owner. The woman, however, was charged with felony second-degree motor vehicle theft, careless driving, and driving without a valid license. And by the way, should also mention that the woman who tried to steal the truck had just been released from jail on a car theft charge. He had just been released from jail on a car theft charge, and now she's going. You would think if she has a history of this that she would know better than to try and steal a stick shift. But apparently she's not a very good car thief, which is why she was in jail for it the first time, and now she's back. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
This is Ed Vlance with OSU Extension. It's planting season. Drivers will be sharing roads with tractors and farm machinery. Be alert for slow-moving vehicles, especially on roads with limited visibility. Watch out for equipment pulling in and out of fields. Drivers and farmers, let's work together this spring to keep our roads safe and accident-free.
This message from WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now, your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Everyone has that moment where you suddenly realize that you are no longer cool. It's happened to all of us. Don't worry. It's just one of those things. It is a rite of passage for adults. You get to the point, you get to the age when you realize you are no longer cool. A new survey of 2,000 Americans finds that the average grown-up begins to feel uncool at the age of 39. The age, now, mind you, this is when adults say that they start to feel uncool. I would argue, and I think that most teenagers would argue, that this threshold is reached much earlier than that. I'm guessing that if you were to ask your teenagers, it doesn't take to the age of 39 before you are no longer cool. But this is when adults start to feel uncool. 40% of adults in the survey feel out of touch, most out of touch, when it comes to modern slang. When you can no longer understand what your kids are saying, that's when you start to feel out of touch. 40% say it comes to modern slang. That's the key indicator. 35% of adults in the survey say that they have lost a grip on celebrity knowledge. That is a big thing when you see a picture of someone on TV on your kid's phone or whatever, and you look at it and say, "Who's that?" And your kids roll your eyes. You start to lose touch with celebrity knowledge. Yeah, that's a big wake-up call. The rest of the top five areas where adults struggle to keep in touch with younger generations, the arts, 34%, and then literature and fashion at 32% each. Kind of interesting. On the other hand, 72% of those in the survey say they still feel in touch when it comes to food. So that's, yeah. 72% feel in touch with the trends when it comes to food. 60% feel up to date on music trends. I see, now for me, that was one of the first things to go. But 60% say they feel up to date on music trends. Okay. 6 in 10 Americans feel similarly in the know when it comes to social media. Again, this is how the adults feel. Not necessarily, I think if you were to ask the kids, you get very different results. But 6 in 10, 60% feel that they are in the know when it comes to social media. 55% believe they are still connected to the movies that younger generations like. And staying up to date with the latest tech inspires high confidence in 49% of the respondents. I don't know about that. I would have to, I would be very interested to see what the kids say. That's all I'm saying. But again, the bottom line number, and maybe the most important number here, the average age that the adult American starts to feel uncool, age 39. Your mileage may vary. Once again, my wife Kyra has joined us in the studio for another collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. Good morning, dear.
Good morning.
And happy Mother's Day.
Oh, thank you.
We have a special collection, an original collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the main course is entirely a Kyra's Kitchen original here
today.
Yes,
it is.
And it is a yummy one. We had it the other night. So it's good stuff. It is a recipe for Italian sausage meatballs and orzo bake.
Yes. So this is your meatballs are 1 pound of Italian sausage, half a cup of breadcrumbs, one egg, 1 tablespoon of minced garlic, half a green pepper diced, 1/4 cup of onion diced, salt and pepper to taste. And then your orzo and sauce is 1 cup of orzo cooked, 1 tablespoon of olive oil, 1/4 of a green pepper chopped, 1/2 cup of onion chopped, 2 tablespoons of minced garlic, 2 cups of chicken broth, 1 6-ounce can of tomato paste, 1/4 cup of sugar, 1/4 cup of apple cider vinegar, and salt and pepper to taste. So preheat your oven to 350 degrees. In a large bowl, combine your Italian sausage, breadcrumbs, eggs, garlic, onion, and peppers. Form your sausage mixture into 1-inch meatballs and place on your prepared cookie sheet. Bake for about 20 minutes. While that's baking, for your orzo and sauce, cook your orzo as directed on your box.
Mm-hmm.
Drain and set aside. Then in a large skillet, I use my iron skillet because this is... I put the iron skillet in the oven. So
rather than a baking dish,
you just use
in the iron skillet.
Right.
You can do a baking dish.
Yes.
But the iron skillet.
Yes. So just
is really good and makes it easy and all of that.
So I lost my place. Pour in your olive oil, preheat, and then add your pepper and onion, saute until caramelized. Add the garlic, cook for a few more minutes, and then add your chicken broth, your tomato paste, your sugar, your vinegar, your salt and pepper. Whisk everything together and let it cook for 3 to 4 minutes. Add your cooked orzo and your meatballs and top with some mozzarella cheese and bake in the oven for about 20 minutes. Let cool for about 5 minutes. Serve and enjoy.
Mm, good stuff.
It was really good.
It is a very good one. Yes. Again, a Kyra's Kitchen original.
Yes, and the leftovers was really good too. I had it yesterday for lunch.
I would imagine so because, you know, again, like many of those dishes, you give it a little extra time for those flavors to kind of merge together.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah.
Yes, it
the
was.
Italian
it was really
sausage
good.
Meatballs and orzo bake. To go along with that, we have a recipe for corn nuggets or corn fritters.
Yes. Yep. Corn fritters, corn nuggets. Yep.
Whatever you want to call them.
Whatever you want to call them. Mm-hmm. So one 11-ounce can of cream corn, 1 11-ounce can of whole kernel corn. I didn't have whole kernel corn, so I just used my frozen corn because you got to drain your corn anyways.
Okay.
So if you have frozen corn, you can do that too.
Canned or fresh corn.
Yes.
All right.
1/2 cup of yellow cornmeal, 1/4 cup of flour, 1 teaspoon of baking powder, 1 egg, and salt and pepper to taste. So in a mixing bowl, combine the cream corn, the whole kernel corn, the cornmeal, the flour, the baking powder, and egg. Stir continuously until a smooth mixture forms. Season with your salt and pepper. Ensure that all ingredients are thoroughly incorporated. Heat oil in a deep fryer or a deep skillet to about 350 degrees. Using a spoon, carefully place a scoop of corn batter into the hot oil, frying them until they achieve a golden brown color. Ensure they are cooked thoroughly because you do not want a batter in the middle.
Yeah,
batter in the middle.
You want to
make sure. Yeah, you want to make sure they're in there. Once done, remove the nuggets from the oil. Place them on a paper towel lined with a dish lined with the paper towel to drain off any of that excess oil. Mm-hmm. And enjoy.
I also like them fried a little bit longer, too. Not just because obviously you want them done, you don't want the runny centers, but also the exterior gets a little extra crunchy.
Yeah.
And that's really good. Yeah. So the corn nuggets, and for dessert, we have a recipe for Congo bars.
Yes.
Congo bars.
I'm making these for Mother's Day.
Okay.
This is my what I want. So
this is your Mother's Day dessert.
Yes.
All right.
So one
little self love there.
That's right. Yeah. Hey, nobody else loves me. I'll do it myself.
Oh, now stop.
1 cup, 2 sticks of butter at room temperature, 2 cups of packed brown sugar, 3 large eggs, 1 tablespoon of vanilla extract, 1 teaspoon of kosher salt, 2 teaspoons of baking powder, 2.5 cups of all-purpose flour, 1.5 cups of semi-sweet chocolate chunks, and 1 cup of chocolate chips.
Yeah.
And so lots of chocolate. Yum, yum, yum.
Lots of chocolate.
Yes. So preheat your oven to 350 degrees. Spray a 9x13-inch baking dish with your cooking spray. In a large bowl, cream together your butter and your brown sugar with your electric mixer. Make sure that is nice and fluffy. So you're probably going to be doing that for about 2 to 3 minutes.
Okay.
Then next, add in your eggs. And then your vanilla, your salt, and your baking powder.
Just in with the stuff that you're already mixing up. Okay.
Yeah. So once that's all nice and fluffy, then add your egg, your vanilla, and your baking powder.
Mm-hmm.
Gradually add your flour into the mixture. Don't do it all at once because then you'll have a flour shower everywhere. Been there, done that. Fold in. So then after all that's done, then fold in your chocolate chunks and your chocolate chips. I do not use the electric mixer for that. I do that by hand.
Okay.
So because you can, if you use your electric mixer, you can chunk up your chocolate chips more. So then they're kind of
Okay.
So you want to mine
probably
in.
By hand is the better option there. Okay.
Transfer the batter to a baking dish. Make sure to spread out evenly. Place in the oven and bake for approximately 30 minutes. You'll want to see your set edges golden brown, but you want your center to still be nice and gooey.
Yeah, kind of the opposite of the corn fritters.
Yes,
you want the center kind of gooey here.
Kind of gooey, not complete gooey.
Yeah,
but
you want them
just
done,
kind of gooey.
But,
make sure your edges are nice and golden brown.
Okay.
And once done, let them cool for about 5 minutes and then cut into bars and serve and enjoy with some Dietz's ice cream.
Yes.
Num, num,
absolutely. Num. The Italian sausage meatballs and orzo bake, the corn nuggets and the Congo bars recipes are all posted at the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page at Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook. So you can follow her page for all of those recipes and all of the weekly recipes. We also have it linked up at our webpage at goodmornings.net. My wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. Again, our thanks to all of our guests for joining us on the program. Of course, remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the program at our webpage. And once again, that is goodmornings.net. Coming up Monday on the program, it's the one thing that house hunters want to know this spring. Should I buy now or wait until mortgage rates start to come down? The president of the Ohio Association of Realtors will join us to discuss the National Association of Realtors' first quarter home prices report and the latest trends in the real estate industry. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.